Contact in the Desert, we are going to, and I'll be speaking there with my colleague George Knapp.
Yes, please save the date, May 30th through June 3rd, the 2024 Contact in the Desert event. It's the world's leading UFO conference. You'll see people like Rich Dolan, Whitley Strieber, Nick Pope, all your favorites will be there. And we are very proud to announce that the Contact's own Captain Ron and myself will be moderating what we're going to call Ask George and George. George, and we're going to put you and George Knapp together on the stage for the very first time. You guys have never appeared together like that, and we're just going to let the audience loose and fire questions at you. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to fill the room really quickly. This is going to be a heck of a fun event. Ask George and George. So that's happening. It's Contact in the Desert. You don't want to miss this one.
George Knapp is one of the best UFO investigators yes. out there today and reporters. Can I ask him questions too on stage?
You can ask him. We're just going to have a ton of fun. That's all we're going to do. We're going to put you guys up there. We're going to talk to you. We'll go to the audience. You'll go back and forth. And it's just, like I said, it's just going to be a hoot.
Well, you made it back to another episode of UAP Studies Podcast, and as always, we always appreciate it. Of course, today is, well, I should say my name is Jason. If you haven't listened to the podcast before, we are joined by our brilliant co-host, Ooby-Doob Scooby-Dooby Banooby, Michael Glosson is joining us today.
That is me. Welcome.
That's you.
What Jason? Kind of nickname is that?
It's a long and unpronounceable one. I like to confuse people before I...
Yeah, it's a big title. It's a big title. Yeah, it's very good. And Michael's actually out of town right now. He's somewhere in the United States on disclosed location. Oh, really?
St. Louis, yeah. I'm in really almost a mansion of a house, but it is impossible to move anywhere in the house without everywhere else in the house knowing that you've moved. And it's all interconnected old wood. So you'll hear various creaking sounds and moaning ghosts and things throughout the podcast, but that's just part of the charm of this show.
That's good. Maybe we capture something paranormal. We don't know. Exactly. So today, guys, we're celebrating Contact in the Desert. This is an event that is taking place very soon. We're talking about May 30th to June 3rd of this year. And of course, we have Captain Ron joining us today on the podcast. And we're going to talk to Captain Ron about of course, his career in ufology and the studying of the phenomenon, and of course, taking on Contact in a Desert as his first year. And like I mentioned to him before, holy shit, as a first year running this show, he has basically skyrocketed this event way past expectations. I'm really impressed with the lineup of this year. So I would like
speakers, right? 70 something events, 75.
We've got about 75 speakers coming in total. It's the most we've ever had, as far as I know. It's pretty incredible. I notice you guys are dressed very formally, and I feel very underdressed for this interview, and I feel terrible.
No, there's a backstory here. Jason is perpetually trying to get me to dress up for the show, and I'm constantly – I used to be an academic before this, and I've got like this like deep-seated hatred for wearing suits. But this is the one time where I'm wearing a suit close enough in time to recording a podcast that I allowed myself to keep it on just to be the one time I'm overdressed for Jason.
Love it.
But you know,
the rest of the show.
Good looking chap. You know what I mean? When you dress up, you feel
well.
Good.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I like it.
I'm a big Bond fan, so I like, you know, just dressing it up a bit. You don't have to be fancy. You could still do it on a budget, but
keep it classy.
Exactly. You know,
I'll just have to be shirtless for the next episode just to compensate for the
clothing optional. No, that's for our OnlyFans page. Okay. That'll be for the OnlyFans page.
Right.
Captain Ron, thank you so much for joining us on UAP Studies Podcast, my man. Greatly appreciate your time. I wanted basically just for those who don't know who Captain Ron is, he's been studying the phenomenon of UAPs and UFOs and several other topics for several years now. He actually started way before I did. I started in 2020. He was 2014, I believe, is when you began your first podcast. which is OG, if you think about it, because back in 2014.
It was a long time ago, yeah.
That's before the New York Times videos or anything.
Yeah, exactly. And podcasts weren't really huge, I think, in 2014. It was still picking up at that point.
Even This American Life, I think, were the only podcasts.
And boy, has that exploded. Now look how many there are. Even in our little subculture, there's just thousands of them now.
4 million podcasts. I think it's 4.5 million podcasts now.
Yeah.
Like everybody's got a podcast.
Yeah.
I remember when I chose the title UAP Studies, it was a toss up between UFO Studies podcast, UAP Studies podcast. And I chose the latter just, I'm like, oh, maybe the name will pick up. You know, maybe UAP will become common. And now if you enter UAP podcasts, it's not just me, it's tons of other podcasts that use that in the title, right? And people could get lost in a wash. But yeah, you've been doing this a long time. You know how this gig goes for sure. But what made you want to start into podcasting to begin with? And first of all, I want to mention about your voice, Ron, is that it sounded familiar to me. I'm like, I know that voice. Like, that voice sounds so familiar. And I was listening to Bill Maher not too long ago. And when Bill Maher was actually quite quiet, subdued, when he smoked a J, he's got a very nice voice, and you have that exact same voice of when he's quiet. You sound so similar.
I've never heard that before. Very funny. Very funny. Yeah. Bill Maher can be great. I like that. He's got that after show podcast that he does now. Yeah, where he smokes weed and drinks with the guest or whatever.
Yeah, and then gets into altercations with him if he doesn't agree with something, right?
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
I don't know why he's doing that, but it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's different. I think different podcasts, different ideas, concepts, I guess, is what gets people to tune into different things. You don't want to basically copy Joe Rogan and have a table.
Well, like we talked about, a lot of these now are so informal. I mean, to me, you know, maybe I'm just too old, but it just seems incredibly informal how some of these are. A lot of these really popular podcasts are extremely informal. I see people smoking weed on their show, and all the way up to Bill Maher. I mean, that's a huge podcast, and you know, they drink and smoke, and he's pretty informal, you know what I mean? It's not like the show anymore, like it was.
Yeah, it just catches on, you know, some format catches on. There's got to be some percentage of those shows where the person is smoking like a pure like herbal cigarette and drinking tea pretending it's bourbon or something, because they're like, it's what, you know, gets the kids or something.
It's almost like the look today. Yeah, that's really bizarre to me, but that is sort of the thing. You see it a lot.
And it's about finding your niche too. When I first started, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was swearing and I was like, I don't know, maybe I'll be a bit like Joe Rogan. But everybody has that in mind when they first start, like trying to emulate somebody. But
Stern started that whole thing with he really did change radio when he came out and he talked like a regular person as opposed to the radio voice and everything, you know?
Right.
And he didn't do the morning zoo thing. He was just like this regular guy who spoke like a regular guy and used regular guy language. That sort of changed everything for radio. And then, podcast took off, and I think it's the same thing. I think there's a lot of these popular podcasts I've come across. I'm amazed how informal they are. Like, they don't even care to have a backdrop or care to have – it just doesn't matter. You know, it's just – That's the world. That's just the way it is.
The professionalism is different. But have you found, like, in your career, and especially doing this for as long as you have you found that more people are drawn to the information that podcasts provide versus mainstream media these days, especially when it comes down to UAPs, UFOs? We know mainstream media is going to go with whatever garbage the Pentagon throws at. But podcasts are different because we'll say, no, that's not true. That's BS. And here's the reason why. Do you think that it's a more reliable source these days?
Well, I think it's certainly age related too. I think obviously goes without saying that the older you are, the less likely you're going to be getting your news from podcasts or social media or whatever, and vice versa. I think the younger you are, the more likely you get your news from podcasts or just social media in general, I think, is where people get their news, not just UAP news, you know, just news in general. That's what I've kind of experienced. It seems to be the case, you know, and of course, you know, it's all about, there's a whole array of these. And now all these researchers and speakers are doing their own shows. So, you know, I sort of gravitate, of course, to the stronger people, the people that I feel are a little bit, a little more serious, a little more skeptical or, you know, objective about this. That's what I gravitate to. I don't like the highly speculative ones or the things that, I don't know why it always has to go to, well, it's aliens. I don't know why that's the first
option. Oh, man, I'm with you. Dude, you know, I feel fine.
Let's eliminate everything else, and then maybe it's aliens. You know,
the
what
second
I mean?
I walked into this subject, I was like, "What? Why is the only possible explanation that's even considered? Like, there's got to be something else, right? Yeah, but no, I feel you.
Any anomaly, right to aliens, and that's always been troublesome for me. And I, of course, you know, I sort of feel like after doing this for a while, I feel like my I don't know, one of my roles is to kind of convince people that are outside this community to take a look at this and take a look at some of the seriousness that's involved in this community and some of the legitimate stuff and the stuff that I don't think people are paying attention to. And so it drives me crazy, all the misinformation, the disinformation, and the nonsense, because the people I'm trying to bring over to the our community and look at this, then they see something crazy or wacky or tinfoil hatty, and then they're like, I'm out. And it's just like, oh yeah, don't jump to the conclusion that it's alien. Let's take a serious look at it. And of course the serious researcher guys don't do that. And that's who I try to follow. And that's what I gravitate towards. That's what we try to emulate with Contact. You know, I just kind of want to keep it in that lane.
Yeah. Well, you have to have boundaries because you can't be a free for all because there's so many theories out there and some people believe all the theories and they've made it up in their mind where they're all interconnected somehow. And I'm like, ah, I can't do that. Like, I can't believe everything.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, maybe it's my bias. I mean, there's certain things I'm like, I'm not too, I don't think that's,
you know, what
real,
this exposed
right?
for me, Jason, was doing this. It's just like something. Because you interview people, speakers, and because you interview speakers, then you get to meet, you know, just for folks that might talk about this topic. And you realize how everyone has their own paradigm. We all see it through our own little lens. And it's in every facet of our lives, but you don't normally just talk to people about those things. You know what I mean? You don't ask them about religion. Where do you fall with all these religion things? Where do you fall politically? Where do you fall on all these different things? And it's fascinating to me that when you examine this, you see how everyone has their own little lens and they have their own little parameters. And for me, I'm a true Libra. I sit in the middle. I really try to look at things objectively. I really try to be fair, open, and honest about things. And I really try to look at these things. I am continuously amazed how, as an example, to illustrate my point, where people will have their paradigm is like, well, we've been studying the Loch Ness Monster for 20 years and we're going to find them and we're really close. I'm like, oh, you really think there's Loch Ness? Oh, for sure there is. We found this. Can you believe those people believe in Bigfoot? and those folks think that that's crazy to believe in Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But you believe for sure there's a Loch Ness Monster. And it's like, wow. I mean, we all have our little parameters on what we believe and what we don't believe. I myself have a lot of things that are, that's too far for me. Yeah, this I can go with. This maybe, boy, that's tougher. That maybe, any of it's possible. I am open to it. But boy, a lot of it is hard for me to really, on a personal level, accept. It's tough to digest some of these things that some people talk about, as you guys know.
I mean, to me, I think almost anything could be true. Like, maybe people are telepathically, you know, communicating with octopuses. Could maybe. Be true, right? It's not off the spectrum of, like, what is possible. But, like, I have to have some substantial argument or, like, some set of reasonable evidence that pushes me there. But not in just this world, in the world of religion, in the world of politics, in the world of everywhere, there's like this phenomenon. I think of it as speculocatenation. It's like speculation after speculation after speculation just concatenated and stuck to each other, and you can get absolutely anywhere. And by the, you know, three or four steps out, you've built this framework of belief that just sprawls across all, you know, no question of like evidence or analysis has really been addressed. It's just this like kind of sprawling web of ideas that holds together out of just excitement that you've put these pieces in order. And people want to kind of hold these things together because they're just really excited about a connection they see between like Eisenhower getting a tooth extracted on a certain day and like the Pentagon having an alien retrieval program. It's like they think that's so exciting and then they're stuck on it. But like, if you just start asking, like, give me the list of reasons why this is the best explanation for it over all others, you start pissing people off. Like, people get really angry at you doing that, as if you're like questioning.
For sure. Don't you think there's a gradation on each and every of these subjects? I mean, some I feel really strong about, some I feel very light about. There's a gradation of all of these things. And I think this is proliferated around the world about everything now. I think politics, people... which is something I never, ever talk about, and I can't stand politics, but they've made up their mind, they've chosen their team, and they don't care what that team says, does, or whatever, they're blue, or they're red, or they're whatever it is, and they've made their choice. And that is kind of the idea with some folks here in this community. Mm-hmm. Some of them are all in on all of it.
It's like a trust instinct. Like, your job in the game is to... is to defend your tribe, whichever tribe you happen to find yourself
exactly. in. Exactly. It's like right, you know, a light in the sky is pretty easy to believe that might be something other than what we think it is. Yet the 20 and back guys, well, now that's a harder thing for me to swallow, because that's talking about a lot of stuff. That's interdimensional travel in 1 second. And, you know, why is that not harder to accept than the light in the sky? You know what I mean? Like, for me, it is. That's tough for me. Yeah. But maybe it's real. Maybe it's true. But it is a harder pill to swallow, and certainly a harder thing to sell to people outside this community, as opposed to saying, you know what, some of these lights in the sky could be ET craft, and the reason they're making these 90-degree turns at thousands of miles an hour is because there's no, you know, being on there. It's artificial intelligence from another galaxy or another star system, and they're sending it across like we are sending probes with artificial intelligence. That's very real world and believable to me. Yeah. And I think you could sell that to a rational person that could, well, yeah, maybe I guess they another civilization would send a probe out. You know, it's very palatable. You can get your head around that. Now to jump to the 20 and back stories, that's another whole level.
I don't even know what that is. That's not a term that I've heard used.
There's several of these guys now that have come out, and they say that they've, like, in 1 second of Earth time. Have you heard about these, Jason, the 20 and back?
I have not. No, this is new to me.
It's where these, I wouldn't even call it, it's not quite a contactee or abductee. It's people have had an alien experience in 1 second of human time. They leave our dimension and they go on an alien world, and they basically work sort of as a slave for 20 years and then come back. And it's just within 1 second. I've seen a lot of these stories come out recently. There's three or four guys that have been saying these stories, and they call them 20 and back or something similar to that.
What a great plot.
It's an interesting story. It makes a great movie.
Watch that. I would read that.
Cheap labor.
It's a little hard for me to swallow, because now you're asking about a lot of leaps of faith here. You know, you've got the time thing, the interdimension thing, the slave thing. There's a lot. That's a tough one. And certainly trying to sell that to somebody outside this community, that's where they throw their arms out and they're going, oh, that's all just science fiction craziness. Maybe it's true.
Inside the community, if you had to choose between what's more likely, the idea that some alien race sucked you out of your sort of temporal nexus, had you work for 20 years, then reinserted you, or that you've had some sort of psychotic break that makes it seem like that happened. It seems obvious that this one, we know at least that it seems within the realm of possibility that this happened, whereas this one, the first story requires breaking like lots of laws of physics as far as we know them. So like, why would you be compelled to believe the first one over the second one unless they give some information that might, you know, you'd be able to verify it somehow? But,
I agree. I think that it's certainly the preponderance of evidence would be that maybe that's something else, you know, and then maybe somebody heard the first guy's story and maybe, I don't know. The further you get to stories like that that we hear, the harder I feel it is to sell people outside the community on some of the stronger things that I feel people should pay attention to. I feel like, you know, Roswell's become so cliche that people don't really look at all the evidence and all the different accounts about the Roswell story. I mean, I love that story. I think Roswell, if you read the books by Schmidt and those and Thomas Carey, those sorts of things, they have a lot of evidence and a lot of first-person accounts and a lot of really credible things. And I feel like it gets shortchanged and dismissed out of hand. You know, people just know the one quick thing that, oh, Roswell crashed, they took the bodies, and it's at Area 51 or whatever they think, you know, and then that's it. That's the extent of it. And it's like, well, wait a minute, why don't you look at that and look at all the little bits of evidence and how many things lined up with how many different eyewitnesses these guys have uncovered. I find it very compelling. I took the time to read those guys' books. I took the time to listen to those guys. And I think if other people did, you know, dive into it a little bit, I think they may feel differently about it as well.
It's a hard ask, though. Like, a lot of people, you're like, well, why don't you do that? And they're like, well, I have three kids and a job, and I haven't read a book in like 5 months. And so, like, to their credit, like, that's how do you get this to the top
five
of their
months, list? 5 years, right?
Yep.
But I think that's where podcasts are changing the name of the game, because people don't have time to listen to a book, but they'll have time to listen to Ron. Or listen to us, or Somewhere in the Skies, or
you know. Well, maybe we can condense that information and make it more digestible, and or hopefully it springs an interest somewhere for somebody that, oh, really? I should dive into that. Look, okay, maybe look at this one. I used to ask all the time after the show, what did you read, or what book are you recommending? You know what I mean? I want to know, because I don't have time to read a lot of these books either, so. Give me your best one. You know what I mean? Because,
yeah.
God, I wish I had time to read all these books. It'd be great.
Well, with the amount that's out there, especially on this subject of UFOs, UAPs, abductions, I mean, there's a plethora of different authors, different theories. I like the ones that are, there was one that was written, I forgot the name of it, but it was an MIT conference in the 90s. John Mack was still around.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it was all about these abduction cases and people that come forward. And I'm a huge
I read
abduction.
That book. That was awesome. And that was great. They talked about how compelling that is. And I forgot the guy's name that was behind it, but he was saying, you know, they're saying, well, there's no evidence. And he said, well, there is evidence. We've got thousands of people that are abductees. Why are we ignoring them? They all have this same story. Why is that's a type of evidence?
Free internet.
I found
too.
That compelling.
Yeah, before the internet. Yeah.
Kind of the consistent, like, base level, ground level argument that happens is not the question of, like, do we have evidence, but the question of, like, what are we going to agree even counts as evidence? Like, in the abduction stuff, it's like, well, we have all this evidence, but then the people who sort of aren't on board, they want to go a level deeper and be like, oh, that's not even evidence. These people are crazy. We can't even let it on the table. Because that would be, in a way, like psychological abuse of them to take their delusions seriously or something. And at that point, you get to like this methodological, philosophical question that's just really, really gnarly and hairy and hard to sort through of like what gets on the table from the very beginning to call evidence.
Completely agree. They want the whole craft. Bring it out on the White House lawn, then I'll believe. Well, that's, you know, we're not going to get that.
I had an argument with Mick West, or not an argument. We had a personal call. I was talking to him and I was like, okay, look, what would it take? What evidence would you look at and be like, that is good enough for me to believe that there's a real phenomenon here, not even an ET presence, but like a real deal thing with the UFO story. And he said, okay, if a UFO landed on, if the UFO landed on the White House lawn. And I said, but wait, well, wouldn't isn't it more likely in your view that somebody could like hoax a landing and broadcast it on TV? And they was like, okay, well, if I were there, and I said, well, isn't it more likely that they could hoax, you know, hoax a physical in-person thing? And then he said, okay, well, if I could watch the craft come from the other side of Jupiter through a telescope and continuously watch it, and then it come and enter the atmosphere and land on the White House, I'm like, okay, if that's where you draw the line, but you have to realize that you have drawn the line of what counts as solid evidence so far that it, you will absolutely never get it. You would never know if this were true because you've asked for evidence that's just so wildly unlikely. And I think he's okay with that because he's fundamentally, I don't think it is an evidence question for him. I think he has a worldview that precludes these things and he's not willing to go any deeper than that. But I don't think most people are that sold on their own worldview. They really were open.
You know, to your point here, I feel like from my worldview, it's like, okay, so then there's a guy, let's use just as an example, since you mentioned him, I'll use him, John Mack. So John Mack works his way up to become the head of psychiatry for Harvard University. We as a society have decided that this is a prestigious university and that this guy is worthy of being the top of that, right? So he takes a look at this subject matter, and he studied some of the people who claim to have had an abduction experience, and his conclusions were that these people are not crazy, they are not delusional, there is something happening to them. Why do we suddenly then dismiss this? Why do we not go, well, wait a minute, why didn't the whole world go, wait a second, this guy's saying that? I understand you get one guy with a tinfoil hat out in the middle of nowhere, and they say, oh, well, he's crazy. I understand that. But I don't understand why you wouldn't listen to John Mack. Why do you think a guy of Danny Sheehan's credibility would speak about these topics if he didn't feel there was something here? Why wouldn't we listen to him? You don't get to be Danny Sheehan without earning some respect, right?
He helped give us the Pentagon Papers, right? We listened to him when it came to like Vietnam or something. But now
he helped with a lot of these things. He the pipeline for the Native Americans. He was in Iran-Contra. All these things, and then he's the smartest, greatest guy in the world. But then when he talks about this topic, all of a sudden, well, I'm not going to give him the credit where credit is due. That to me is where I think that this breaks down, because I'm willing to give these credentialed, serious people, Paul Hellyer, for example. You didn't get to be in that position. Why aren't we listening to these people? I don't understand it. I really don't. It seems bizarre to me that people could get to that level, have these feelings. Why wouldn't we give them the respect that they've earned and hear them out? And maybe there is something to it. That's how I feel.
Well, even that Israeli commander or whatever. Yeah. He ran the space program for 30 bloody years.
Yep.
He says there's some sort of federation of some sort of different entities that Donald Trump was just, you know, told about it. And when you see the Donald Trump interview, when they ask him about aliens, he's always like, he's like almost excited and like, well, let me tell you, you know.
That's not a bad Donald Trump you just
that's
did.
Not bad. Well, you know, there's many of them. Many of them, let me tell you. But it's crazy. You know, nobody batted an eye. Wasn't in a newspaper. Nobody cares. The Pentagon comes out and says,
"Blip in our world and goes away." And yeah. I don't understand it. I mean, it was great when John Mack thing in 2017, and that was on, you know, 60 Minutes, and it was kind of on the front page of the New York Times. It was kind of in the world for a while, and then it just kind of goes away again.
Yeah.
In the John Mack case, I think there is. It's instructive because he comes out and starts saying, right, you tell the story exactly right. He's the head of Harvard's medical school psychiatry department. And he comes out and starts talking about these abductee cases. But then the counter narrative becomes, well, first it's that, how did he get access to these people? And the fact is, John Mack is just an insanely compassionate person. Oops.
the new Zoom function, it does the bubbles.
I had no idea. It says that John Mack is such a like a savant of compassion that people will tell him things that they would never have told anybody else. Right. That's how he gets all these people to start telling their abductee stories. Then when he starts taking them seriously, other people in his department say, well, Sean Max is a seriously compassionate person, and he can get sucked in to people's experiences and sort of give them too much credence because he cares so much about them. And he's really gone off the rails this time. And you're like, there's no way that a person ever could be right in John Max's position.
You can't beat it, because no matter what, they're going to use that. They're spinning around. Everything's spun the other way. It's how politics are today. I've read that book, Abduction, by him, and I think it's fantastic, and I think he's very objective about it. And he doesn't, I don't know. A lot of these things drive me crazy. It's like, why do we just dismiss? Now we have Avi Loeb, Dr. Avi Loeb, head of astronomy from Harvard University again. These are, you know, how do you get to that level? I mean, that's a pretty impressive place to be. And he found the interstellar object and everything. He's very open to this. So why aren't other people? I don't get it.
But, you know, and especially in the academic world, and Michael, you could attest to this, but, you know, reputations are at stake, and you don't want to, it's almost like science now has its own dogma that you're not allowed to go venture here. You can't go venture there. You got to stay in the middle, you know, neither left or right, because that's the fringe. But the thing is, the fringe is what makes us discover new things. And as a species, I mean, we can't really discover new lands on our planet. We pretty much know the landscape, but our future is in the stars. Our future is on other planets. And I always think that with the abduction phenomenon is the most central and important part of the study of UAPs, because if we want to know why they're here, we need to know why are they selecting these specific people. What is it genetically, emotionally, maybe even spiritually about these people that are selected to be repeat abductees?
Well, according to Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and those guys that have studied this, they cannot find that. What I've right. read from those guys, they're like, it does not discriminate by race, by age, by gender, by profession, anything. He's like, anyone and everyone could become a contactee. It's just, it's more family lineage and that sort of thing. And that alone is a fascinating aspect of this topic. You know, I mean,
if that's true, guys, the overbearing data. Whiteness of the UAP community is a problem.
The what?
But if that's true, then the almost total whiteness of the UAP community is a serious problem, right? I mean,
certainly from the researcher standpoint, it is.
And yeah.
I don't understand why it is that way. You know, people have said that to us about our thing. I'm like, please, I could care less what anyone's race or whatever it is. As long as they study this topic, send them my way. And you're right, it's completely dominated. I don't know why.
It's culturally as well. Here we have a Punjabi population, Cantonese and population as well, very huge populations, but they don't talk about it. It's taboo to talk about it. You just, if it happens to you, you keep quiet. And culturally, in your location where you're on the planet, there's certain, like South Korea supposedly has no UAP reports ever. South Korea, like, you think they would constantly monitor their skies. They have no reports. And it's like, why? But meanwhile, in Europe, people are seeing triangular crafts, mostly predominantly it's Nordics that people are reporting in Europe. Out here, it's grays or mixtures of grays and mantis-like entities. So different locations seem to have different, more predominant abductions or entities visible. So I thought it was interesting, but it's such a huge thing to study now, because now you're going global trying to figure out, well, why is it predominantly white people or Caucasians that are coming forward with these? It is happening within the African-American communities as well. It's happening in Africa. It's happening in the Middle East. It happens everywhere. But they don't talk about it, either because of the religion or the culture. I think we're a lot more open in the West now to it than anything. But if you're clinging to old cultures, this is way out out there. You know what I mean? Like, you would get shunned for talking about that.
Yeah, it's, really, or it's either too out there, or it's like, we've always known about these.
That's the other way. Right.
Native Americans who are like, yeah.
They're blasé about it. Exactly. Cheryl Costa, for example, you've seen her work. You know, she studied this amazing, amazing work in collecting the data on the reports. And it's everywhere, certainly in the United States. If you look at North America, I mean, it's throughout every zip code. There are reports. So that tells you it's certainly happening everywhere. You know what I mean? It's not these isolated pockets. They call certain places hotspots and whatnot, where there's elevated numbers of cases. But there are cases in pretty much every zip code, according to her data, which is amazing to me.
This is where I have an issue with the whole Eisenhower signing a contract with the ETs, because there's many things that don't add up. One, it's assuming that aliens understand what a contract is and that they adhere to the rules of the contract with full understanding of its limitations. Second of all, he says, okay, well, you're allowed to abduct a certain amount of people per year. Okay, so is he giving them permission for the whole planet or just for the limits within the boundaries of the United States? Yeah, I have so many questions that pop up, and people are like, well, no, he agreed. It's like, okay, but he's speaking on everybody's behalf. They're like, oh, you're the leader of the world. You're a leader of a country, not the country, the only one that exists. So I don't believe that. I don't think, you know, when they say, well, they have a mutual working with the U.S. government. No, the U.S. government fires on these things, shoot them down. And I don't remember us ever voting on that. Is it a good thing that we're shooting them down? Yeah.
You know, exactly. Let's go with the assumption for a second that there is a off-planet race coming here, right? Like you just said, they came, the folklore is that they met with Eisenhower and he cut this deal, right? So let's just assume for a split second that's it. I can't imagine them distinguishing our little country lines and our little, it's like that's just so ridiculous to believe, because it's like that jungle theory. They say that, you know, think of it as the jungle theory, that we would walk, two scientists would walk through the jungles of Africa, for example, and stumble across this huge ant hill that has millions of ants in it. And they, obviously we're aware of them. They may not even be aware of us there. We would pluck, our scientists would pluck a couple of ants, put a number on their back, put them back in the mix. We would maybe take a couple specimens and maybe cut them up, whatever we do. And they're oblivious. We don't care about their little society. We're like, well, this one's the queen, this one's the king, this one. We're not going to like not divide this little area because that's the one they call North America or whatever that may be. You know what I mean? We're just... I would imagine it'd be the same thing. Obviously they're more advanced than us if they've figured out how to get here, however that may be. And if that were the case, I don't think that they would respect our little boundaries and our little states and our little, you would imagine there'd be much higher. Does than
it,
that,
but right? it's all tribal, right, Ron? Like, you know, a state or a country is a tribe. And there's tribes within the tribe. So if you think, okay, well, you live in the United States, but which state do you live in? And are you Christian, atheist, or other? And under the Christian, are you Protestant? Are you evangelical?
Yeah, but are the aliens going to do that? Are they going to say, okay, now you're American. Now tell me where to go in Canada. And what about Uganda?
Yeah.
And what about, where should I go? And are they writing this down and meeting with all these leaders? They're not.
They don't care.
they wouldn't care. I mean, it just wouldn't make logical sense. So if they were coming, maybe they would come to where they thought technology was the highest, I would guess, something like that.
Yeah.
So that whole Eisenhower thing stuff.
Oh, sorry. Maybe they go where they think there was the least chance of like adverse encounters, you know, which would not be Washington, D.C., you know, the idea that aliens would show up and immediately realize like, well, America's running the world and their president's the one who to talk to, that seems a little strange to me. It seems like a very American
way of thinking. They wouldn't think that. They wouldn't care. I mean, that is ridiculous. I think that's our just culture of us thinking we're the center of the universe kind of a thing. I think that's where that comes from.
Throwing our own crap into you know, their way of thinking. That's, you know, if you're the word alien has been so washed with sure. so many different things, but alien fundamentally is something that you cannot understand or fathom. It is alien to you. So, you know, when we say that we're trying to understand the way they think, it's like, yeah, but from a human perspective, because of a human brain, no matter how far out I think, no matter how many psychedelic drugs I have to help me get there, I'll never be able to think the way they think, right? And I think that's the biggest part with us is we need to understand intellectually we're so dumb and suppressed compared to what they're able to do. One of the things I really liked from the Aerial School Phenomenon documentary was one of the little girl, when she was talking to John Mack, she had a feeling that it was telling her, you, and she, in her own words, you must not get too technological.
Technologized. That's the word she used as a kid.
Yeah,
technologize.
Yeah, past your spirituality. So spirituality and technology is supposed to go together. But right now we're killing spirituality, just focusing on technology. And that may prove to be our destruction or our demise. Even if you think about, you know, the meta and the virtual reality, people are going to willingly plug themselves into the matrix just for a distraction, just so they don't have to, if somebody gives you a way out and you're like, yes, I'll take it, regardless what it is, even in the subject of UFOs, if you're like, look, this and this happened, it could be that it was a weather balloon, but we're not sure. It's a weather balloon. That's it. I could sleep at night. You know, I could dismiss everything because you gave me a way out. And we do that in this field. I think there's, you know, with our fans and families.
We do the opposite in this field, too.
Please explain.
Well, that every object in the sky, nope, it's a UFO. That's an alien-driven spacecraft.
Yeah, yeah.
I always like to say that, you know, we're dealing with an unknown here. So everything that we've talked about today is just speculation. We are just having fun here that maybe this, and I would think that logically, and maybe this, but I really don't like when people try to say they have all the answers. I'm always like, really, really? Is that, you know all these things, but other people don't? And other people have the complete opposite opinion, and they know that they're right. So,
yeah,
Jesus, it's tough.
But we're seeing that more, Ron. Like, yep. You know, there's certain names, let's not name them, but they want to be the first. And that Michael and I, we joke, it's like, number one, you know, it's got to be the one that's going to reveal all disclosure to humanity. And now they're doing separate shows. They're not attending other people's shows. They're, you know, it's just about us. Let's keep the focus on us. Trust me. I know I have information. I can't tell you.
I'm the one.
But trust me.
That sounds like a cult leader. And I it all drives me crazy. And I don't like any of that stuff.
It seems like with Contact in the Desert, you're doing a great job of not creating that ethos, right? You're bringing together like 75 people who have pretty, you know, this wide spectrum of beliefs and approaches to
absolutely
subject. Like, what's the idea? Like, when you approached arranging this event, here, if you look at the screen, if you're watching, you get to see the lineup of all 75 or so different speakers they had. Like, what was the selection criteria? Like, how did you put together this particular group?
Well, I think they do a different, you know, theme each year. You know, they kind of, this is the 10-year anniversary, so we're kind of trying to pay a tribute to both the, it's a 10-year anniversary of the live conference. So we're kind of paying a tribute to that. We're going to have a legends panel where we have people like Whitley Strieber and Travis Walton and Richard Dolan and Linda Moultonhow, people that have really made a difference in this community over the last, you know, 20 years plus. And I think bringing together diverse ideas is very, very important. Our lane, compared to some of the other conferences, is much more science-based, much more real-world, much more 3D perspective on some of these topics. We do like to explore everything, but I think that's more of our lane. We're really trying to get to what's going on here. You know, I mean, this stems from all of us having this internal quest for the truth. And we know it's an unknowable, but we want to get closer. So we want to bring in the people that are at the forefront of this. And, you know, some of the more fringy stuff is not really our lane. We want to try to keep bringing in scientists and keep bringing in people that are studying this and that have been interviewing these people and talking to these people firsthand and going to these sites of these monoliths and ancient structures and things and hearing firsthand. And then I love, you know, Contact. It was such a genius name when they came up with Contact in the Desert, because this event really is about contact. It's about the speakers getting to have contact with one another, and they can exchange their ideas and what their research is showing. Us as attendees get to interact with them. It's a rare opportunity that you can actually talk with speakers one-on-one and have some time with them. And you talk with other, you know, attendees as well, because the whole hotel for 5 days is just Contact in the Desert people. It's not like we're at some big resort and other people are coming and going too. Everybody there is for this event. So that's why they're all there. So you could just talk to the person next to you wherever you are, and they're going to either have an experience or have an interest or have a favorite speaker. It's just it's really a unique forum.
And, you know, the lineup, even I was surprised about actor Thomas Jane. He's going to be there too. I didn't know he was into UFOs.
He's working on a book on UFOs, as a matter of fact, and he's really a cool guy, and he's been really nice and gracious and excited about coming, and he's working on his UFO book right now, and he's going to talk about that, and, you know, what a great opportunity.
Yeah, and you're going to have George Norrie and George Knapp, I think, on the same stage.
Yeah, they say that's the first time ever that that's happened, and here's two legendary guys that have been doing this forever. And they, you know, both work at Coast, of course. And what a great opportunity. We're going to kind of do a little thing with Tom Danheiser, the producer of the show, and me, and we're going to ask him a few questions. And then we're going to do an AMA with the audience and let them ask these guys anything they want, which is really a cool opportunity.
Yeah, you know what? And many of these people I know, some of them I know quite well, but some of them I've interviewed once. Never met any of these people in person. So I really hope that, you know, I think even the course of, what is it, 5 days?
5 days. That will change, my friend. You will get to meet a lot of these guys.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. And again, guys, for the listeners, Ron has been very, very gracious to me and UAP Studies Podcast. And he's helping us get down there this year to be able to attend this. And I'm so, so thankful for that as well. Now, this has taken place at the Renaissance Resort in Indian Wells, California. The dates exactly are May 30th to June 3rd. The tickets are still selling, but is there any specials going on right now, or are they at full price at this point?
Well, yeah, right now they're running a 10% off for Easter. And that's going right now on for the tickets. And then the hotel, we have discounted hotel rooms on our website, and I honestly think there's like 15 or less left for hotel rooms.
Yeah, I was booking up. Yeah, I was booking up very, very fast.
Yeah,
and it's a beautiful resort. If you guys get a chance, go check it out online. Renaissance Resort in Indian Wells. You, like I said, you didn't pull any punches this year, Mr. Captain Ron. You rocked it because, you know, especially for the first year taking this on, that you
we
have
actually
a rock star.
Planned on cutting it back to 50. When we sat down in August and, you know, we went over to Gordon's house and, you know, we all sat down and decided, let's pull way back to 50 speakers. Let's tighten this thing up. And then, you know, it's the 10-year anniversary, and it just sort of started growing. And next thing you know, I think it's 74 people on stage this year, which is suddenly the most speakers we've ever had. So just one of those things that happened, and you know, this is the year to do it with the 10-year anniversary coming up and everything. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, this is the one to attend definitely this year. It's often imitated, though. You and I had a conversation not too long ago, and you showed me something, and I was like, oh, okay, I could see where the imitation comes from. You know, it, because it is you know, a huge event, and as it goes forward, I mean, if you got 70 speakers, you know, next year you'll have 100. Right. Oh, you might have to extend it to 6 days as opposed to five. Lord. Right. But it's crazy. And so looks like there's going to be 55 free lectures at this event, 14 free panels and conversations, 38 intimate paid workshops, 12 intimate paid intensives. That's when you get to make out with George Knapp and Linda Moulton Howe, I believe, right? No.
we're gonna cut that back to 2.5 hours with them. You know, the workshops are a chance to get into an intimate setting with the speakers, and the intensives, it's even more. So if you are a fan of one of these people, you get an opportunity to really genuinely spend some time with them. And most of them have been extremely gracious about it. They're wonderful. They usually, workshops and intensives, they'll go over even more material. They can go more in depth than they can in their free 90-minute lecture. But everybody on there, you get a chance to see them for free, every single person on that thing. So the only thing we charge for is for the workshops and the intensives. And then the intensives are 2.5 hours with, you know, a small room with these people. And a lot of times they'll open it up for AMAs and you can ask them anything. What a great opportunity. I mean, I remember the first time I went to Contact and I did that, and I thought, this is so cool that I can actually interact with these guys. I saw them on the TV shows, or I listen to them at night or whatever. I mean, who has not driven across the country and heard Nori or Knapp on the radio and just been in seventh heaven? I mean, that for me is the greatest. I could drive all night when those guys are talking. I love it.
Ufologists, they're people too. Yeah, or they're just like us. It's not just like the events, which obviously you got plenty, but you, let's say like on the 10th, Saturday, there's a celebration party. I love this. You called it Contact.
That's the first, not the 10th. It's the 10th anniversary.
Oh, the first 10th anniversary. I'm sorry. I wrote that
Please
wrong.
Please don't show up on the 10th. Nobody will be there.
Nobody will be there. You'll be paying full price for nothing.
June 1st. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So that Saturday, you have a celebration party with treats, and you call it Contact in
Desserts.
Yeah, I love it. That's freaking brilliant.
I'm going to try to get something really unique, like, we haven't sorted it out, but we might get like a big UFO cake or something. We're going to do something really fun with treats and a party. We're going to have a live band. You know, Friday night, we're doing Matthew James Bailey and Adam Curry are going to do a demonstration of a live in-person Turing test with different people from our show, like Tracy Dolan and Paul Hynek, and other people are going to participate. And then you're going to try to determine, was that a human answering that question, or was it artificial intelligence? Because artificial intelligence has really advanced recently. And I don't know two guys that know more about this than Adam Curry and Matthew James Bailey. And they're putting together a first time ever live Turing test. It's like Blade Runner. Remember that movie Blade Runner where they try to determine if that was a real person or whatever they were, virtual person or whatever,
the Sims or whatever.
Right. So we're going to be doing that live, which will be really kind of a cool, it's those sorts of unique things that being there firsthand and being part of are just so fun,
right?
And so for those people who can't be there firsthand, what's the like next best option
for those that live in Northern Canada and cannot make it down to Palm Springs? We are going to do it live this year online for the panel room, our giant room. We have like a 1,300 or 1,400 seat room called the Crystal Ballroom, and all of our panels take place in there, all except for, I think, one. So that we're going to run that live throughout Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, the whole time. So anything that happens in that room, any of the panels, you can watch them. And then they're just going to leave it on in between, and they're going to like talk to me and stuff. So I'll be updating people on like behind the scenes, what's happening next and that kind of thing. And you get an opportunity to see all of that. So that'll be something new that we're going to start off this year and try just for that big room. But that'll be fun, a fun way to participate. And then they're going to have a live chat room, so you can talk to other people, submit questions, do these different things in the live thing. And that's going to go on our website here in the next few days. We're going to open it up for our first live stream ever.
Nice. And for your podcast, the Beyond Contact podcast, are you going to be interviewing a lot of these guests that are coming?
That's the plan. And that's supposed to be launching any minute. That was supposed to launch a few weeks ago. And we had a couple little hiccups, but it's going to come off any anytime now, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. And then, yeah, we're going to right away. We've already talked to some of the speakers. They're going to come on and they'll talk about what they're going to be talking about at the show and everything. And that'll be fun. And, you know, but being there live, it's another level, you know, there's nothing like personal interaction. You know, you said yourself that you were on the observation deck when I tried to do the virtual, basically created Contact in the Desert online during COVID. So we all got used to the Zoom stuff, and this is great. And this is fun. And it's 100 times better than a phone call, but it's 1,000 times better being there in person. Just the energy of people interacting with people. I just love it.
You feel like you're part of it.
You right? feel like, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they are. I mean, that's a big part of our thing is this. A lot of the people in this community, you know, they ask the questions. They're adding to the energy. They're adding to the ideas. We all want to hear ideas. I don't know what to believe yet. So we're all open to hearing more ideas. And so are a lot of the speakers and researchers. And a lot of connections are made. And, you know, email me your story or that kind of thing. There's a lot of that going on. So there's a lot of collaboration, a lot of what's happening in your neck of the world. We have people from Europe coming. We have people from all over the place coming. And, you know, what's the vibe in Europe right now about UFOs? You know, we had the big thing here in 2017. Did that happen there? You know, it's fun to see even that.
Yeah, just the progress of where everybody's at globally, because it's not just a United States problem, a Canada problem. It's a global
problem. I love that you call it a problem. That's great.
But it is a problem because we don't know what we're dealing with. And, you know, right. my biggest fear, tell the truth, gentlemen, is us shooting them down. And, you know, these rumors that we have these underground bases that are specifically designed to track them down and shoot them, and that they're successful to shoot at least one down every year. So you're like, okay, but are we picking a fight with something that we don't understand here because they've shown no aggression, maybe, that we're just like, hey, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. Or are we going to eventually push the buttons too far? And that's my biggest fear when it comes down to this phenomenon. It's like, who's in charge and who elected that person to call the shots?
You know, remember Stephen Hawking said, don't put yourself out there. You don't know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
What's I that? Agree with that. You know, Stephen Hawking that. Was saying, don't, we should not be advertising that we're here. We may not want the people that find us to find us.
Right.
You know, my big fear is that we're not going to know. I want to know. I want to get to the bottom of this. We got Danny Sheehan and Steve Bassett on the front lines in Washington, trying to get more disclosure from the government. What do they know? And, you know, that's an uphill battle, but I want to know. And I just hope we get more and more information before I die.
Well, you got time. I think that my big worry is that we will eventually find out. And if it's beings, when we talk to them, they'll say, you should see the shit that we are trying to figure out. It's like,
you can imagine this goes right up the scale. Of course. Yeah.
That's my big fear is that it's just an endless staircase of mystery.
You think we're advanced, you should see what the next star system's got. You think they won't even relate to you because they're so far beyond.
Yeah.
You know, this just goes up, 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 and up. Somebody once told me how they were talking about people that have, you know, classified levels of classification in the government or whatever.
Yeah.
And they were saying this is just a fascinating, fun thing to think about. You can imagine two guys having a conversation with another guy and they are part of this classified program. And they said they could say to the third person, well, the reason we're not talking about this publicly is because if you knew what we knew, you would understand why we're not doing it. And then you can imagine that one of those guys goes to the next table and there's two guys with a higher classification than they have. And they would say to him, well, if you understood what we know, you would understand and we would never be. And you could just imagine how high does that go? You know, I mean, is there just one guy or one agency or whatever? I mean, it's a hypothetical, but it certainly is fascinating to speculate what other people know. There must be a reason for it. You know what I mean? There's probably, maybe it's for our own good. You know, it's
maybe. What? But maybe it also goes in a ring. It's also totally possible that it's not just an upward trajectory, that they're all just looking to the person to the left, and they really do know something this person does that would make a difference, but they can't say it, and it just never gets back around.
Right. And I want to know. I want the government to give us everything they got. I want, you know, that's the other thing. You can get disclosure from the people who are seeing these lights, the military pilots who are witnessing these craft, the people who have had contact experiences. That's why you go to Contact in the Desert. You can interview people standing there that are firsthand experiencers on one level or another. So that's a form of disclosure or more knowledge. And I just really want to know. I want to know what's going on. I want to know what we know. I want to know, are they really coming here? And if they are, why? And what's the objective? And, you know, David Jacobs and all those guys have all that data on hybridization and all these ideas. Who knows?
My only fear.
People that also talk about, oh, I'm sorry, brother. I just wanted to mention there because, you know, we covered the alien idea, but it's also, we have people that talk about afterlife. Richard Martini talks about us going to the afterlife and communicating with beings that are on the other side. You know, that's another thing. And we have people that talk about psychedelics and going to those worlds of DMT and whatnot. And, you know, basically it's non-human intelligences that different people are claiming to have experiences with, whether it be psychedelics, whether it be alien abductions or contactee experiences, whether it be, you know, afterlife contact, whether it be ghosts, any of these things. So there's other things that we're talking about here. It's basically communicating with non-human intelligences. And that's a fascinating thing right there. And then you've got artificial intelligence coming along.
Which is
become sentient? And is that, that now we're communicating with a non-human intelligence right here? So,
and if we created them, is it possible that somebody created us instead of
then you got the
robots as
biological theory that says just exactly that, Jason. And
exactly.
Why not? And then we got, you know, Andrew Collins and these guys that talk about Johnny Enoch and those guys that go to these ancient sites, and they've got compelling evidence that this just doesn't seem like something that could have been built 12,000 years ago with people that were eating grubs and living in caves, you know, and they figure out all this math and everything. We've got a guy named Robert E. Grant. Do you guys know this guy?
I'm not familiar, no.
This is a guy worth Googling. This is an amazing guy, and I'm going to give you the 20-second version. He, like, just in the last 30 days or so, spent some time inside the King's Chamber of the Pyramid.
Oh, wow.
And he brought in like the LIDAR, the high tech cameras whatever. And he has discovered etchings on the wall that reveal basically the constellations on the wall. And it's lined up with the way that that's lined up with where it would be in the sky at the time that they were built or whatever. That is insanely a huge discovery. So he's going to be talking all about that, and he's got a lot of great stuff.
Like Prometheus sort of mythology, Ridley Scott sort of stuff, right? That's amazing.
It's right out of Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code. I mean, in fact, we were talking to him the other day, and he saw similar etchings that he saw inside that on the last summer, the Da Vinci painting.
Oh, interesting.
It's mind-blowing stuff. It's right out of the Da Vinci Code.
Love it.
And that's very real-world stuff. I mean, these are LIDAR scans. This is real. This is not...
There's data. There's actual data you can talk about.
There's data that you can look at. Absolutely.
You know Andrew Gallimore? Is he on your radar?
He was here last year. Absolutely fascinating guy.
His work is unbelievable. Psychedelic DMT space stuff.
Well, we have a guy that's going to be talking about very similar things, which is his name is Pascal Michael Michel. I don't know how he says it. You know that guy?
Yeah.
Dr. Michael. Dr. Pascal. I don't know if he says Michel or Michael is his last name. And he studies that same exact stuff. It's very similar study, so we're mixing it up a little bit. And then we have Paul Hynek, who also talks about DMT use and contacting other realms, or it's not what people think. Certainly it's not getting high on these kind of things.
Oh,
it's,
no, anybody who's done TMT, no, this is not like, you don't just
this
do this.
This is another world of entering another world and communicating with non-human intelligence is the answer. And wow, that stuff is fast. It's riveting. It's riveting.
And it's real science. I mean, like they have, I think 100%. In London, they've got a whole research group of people who've doing this new protocol where they can take a DMT trip for like 4 hours and communicate with beings and ask them all sorts of questions to determine if like there's actually another intelligence on the other end or not. And it's not just sort of vague.
But people see the same entities as well, though. They say.
That was my next words, Jason. I agree 1,000%, brother. How do you explain that? How do you explain, hey, when you walked in and you saw the guy, the snake woman on the left, wait a minute. You saw that same thing that I saw without reading my book about it or whatever? That to me, that's very compelling. Why did we dismiss that out of hand? That's extremely compelling.
I think it proves one of two things. Either there really is an independent space where that goddamn phone bubble keeps coming up. Either there's an independent space where you actually are accessing and talking with real minds there, or it proves that there is some sort of truth to this Jungian idea that everybody shares a set of archetypes that are like living minds that all sort of inhabit us in some way that we're all accessing when we go into this sort of DMT experience. And either whatever it shows is groundbreaking, right? It does not have to.
Does that tie to the Akashic record that we're all tapped into and we're all pulling from? Is it something as simple as that we're just a receiver? You know, I mean, it's really fascinating stuff.
It is. I'm so glad that you're doing this, dude. This is an amazing event that you've pulled together, such a palette of interesting ideas and different, you know, frames of work. I just can't wait to be there and see everything that's going on. Thank you for doing it, man.
Yeah. The downside of coming to contact in the desert is when you look at the schedule, it's like, what do I do? There's seven things happening at the same time and I got to pick one. Oh boy.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing about
this. But it's, you know, it's like a buffet. Right. You decide what you want to consume. You decide what you want to do while you're there. And DMT will not be provided by Contact in the Desert. Just for the record, it's not provided. Don't bring your own. Don't bring any drugs to the events.
I can neither confirm or deny any such rumors.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't have anything like that. But these guys will be talking about their experiences, which is really compelling stuff. You know, another compelling thing that you hear these stories about the abductees or contactees who have had these experiences where they, like, say they go up on a ship or what have you, and then they like, these aren't my shoes. And another guy's got his shoes and they see each other or whatever.
Wrong pants, wrong shirts.
Wow. Yeah. That's compelling.
Or even people that they never met. They only met on the ship. But then, like you said, they recognize each other one day. You know, like, holy shit, that's the guy that was, you know, in the room with me. And for some reason, it triggers then. But it's
those
weird.
Those are the strong cases to me. I mean, how does that happen? When anytime it's a multiple witness or a multiple experiencer, that ramps up the credibility of it to me. Because now you got it from two viewpoints. And if these guys say, those are my shoes and those are my shoes, that's a pretty compelling case.
Absolutely. But it also makes it scientifically almost like untouchable, because we don't even know what we would do to scientifically investigate any further. We just have this thing on the table that we're like, fuck. And honestly, you just have to ignore it. If you're a scientist, you have to be like, I don't know what to do with this. I don't really study these things. I'm just going to slide it off. Like, there's this great Whitley Strieber story I heard him tell, where a guy he knew who was like a radio DJ in the 60s or something, who had like famously awful teeth, one day is on a road trip in the middle of the night and he has this kind of like Betty and Barney Hill experience, but he like drives into a luminous cloud and has some sort of abduction experience. And he says that the guy doesn't quite remember what happened, but he came out of it and his teeth were like fixed.
Oh,
hallelujah. That's crazy.
Wow. Everybody in his life, I don't know if this is true. I'm like, I know Whitley Strieber tells this story, but he says the guy like goes to work the next day and he's got like perfect teeth, and everybody's just like, well, what the hell did he do with that?
I mean, it's aliens. Yeah. Aliens fix my teeth. Dentist just, aliens. Yeah.
I mean, even me, if that's true, I have no idea what to do. I'm just slide that on the.
Well, they have the whole scientific method of it has to be repeatable and whatever. We can't do that here. This is not one of those things. But that doesn't mean we can't look at this scientifically. People ignore the studies of we brought them up earlier, like Dr. Jacobs or something, or some of these people that interview a lot of contactees. They have a lot of data. They have a lot of data. That's scientific evidence. We have this data that this many people, and they have the same sort of experiences. That's compelling. Even if it's not alien, what is inherent in us that make people feel they're having the exact same experience, and it's this bizarre experience? Just like we just discussed, guys, about the DMT. How can these guys both see the same being while on DMT? Either it's real, that there is another realm they're going to, or there's something causing these guys to have the exact same sensation of a thing. Well, same thing with the alien abduction thing. How is that possible that they're having the same exact experience? Is that something just in our core DNA that a certain percentage of us have this illusion?
Mental illness. It would be a mental illness.
And why would it be that we have the same sort of, I rise above my bed, go out a window, onto a ship. Why would we all, if mental illness, have the same? That's odd to me. That doesn't seem to jive with.
If that is true, that is a fascinating, interesting, like valuable finding. If the sort of dismissive explanation is true, we need to study why people have like such provocative and consistent psychoses. I mean, this is a psychotic experience. You can't distinguish it from reality. That's a psychosis.
And lawyers, people in the defense department.
I can't think of his name. Maybe you guys know. There's that guy. I thought he was from Canada, even. The guy that came up with the God helmet. Remember this guy?
Oh.
And he was able to, if you Google the God helmet, he was able to almost replicate an alien abduction experience on people's heads.
They were using like neurofeedback or some sort of weird.
And he ran some sort of electrical signal, and it wasn't quite an alien experience, but they would feel a presence there. They would feel eyes looking at them. They would feel these sensations. And so he was speculating that maybe there was some sort of electromagnetic thing happening around people's heads or something. So, but that's very compelling too. And if that's it, maybe let's still get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, let's figure
that would be fascinating too. It doesn't have to be aliens, but look at all the different things that could be alien. And I always like to say too, of all these thousands of speculations and millions of stories, we only need one.
We need one
guy in one country, one time to be real. That's all we need.
But even then, they'll figure out a way around it, that it was a, it was, you know, it's AI, it's deep fake, you know, they'll always find a reason.
It's a shrug. I mean, you can be a totally intellectually honest scientist and look at something you don't understand, just be like, I don't know. I don't study that. I don't know what to do with it. I study butterflies, you know, or whatever it is. Like, I do chemical synthesis for Bell Labs. Like, this is not my lane. And almost no scientist really feels like this is my lane. I have to deal with this. So you can show tons of scientists really great. I'm part of the Scientific Coalition of UAP Studies. We have an enormous sets of data that are rigorous and like well organized and I think fairly conclusive. But there's tons of scientists you can show it to, and they're like, oh, but I'm going to go do electrical sort of circuit work.
I'll go make a sandwich.
Yeah, I got a kid I got to pick up at 5.
And listen, prove us wrong. Show that it's not that. That's fine too. And I like the new AI systems are developing that are pointing at the sky that can distinguish between this is an aircraft, this is a helicopter, this is a satellite, this is a whatever. This is an unknown. Well, I think as we get more of those throughout the world, it'll be very exciting to see, well, what is an unknown and what is that and how. And, you know, of course, it could always be, say, it's military tests or whatever, but maybe not.
I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be a big fucker that brings it about. I think it's going to be a massive ship like the Phoenix Lights. It's not going to be little lights in the skies. It's not going to be a Tic Tac. It's going to be a big, massive ship. Another sighting somewhere in the world, just like Phoenix. But this time, every doorbell camera, every dog, every person with a cell phone will have captured this on video. It'll be irrefutable proof.
Yeah, but see, but that's still refutable. I think if they, if the president comes out and says, we've got this and we've got that, I think there's a segment of the population that won't believe him.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. People, I mean, already there's like half of America that's like, this dude is so demented. They don't know what the hell he's talking about. Right. Or they'll say it's right, just,
they'll just dismiss it. Nope. I'm MAGA or whatever I am. And I don't agree with, and then vice versa. When the next guy gets it, they'll say, no, it doesn't matter, that's fake. That's a hoax. I mean, that's tough.
And we've already had like real events like Fatima, like 70,000 people at one time saw the same, what is considered a Catholic miracle at this point, but the same set of like impossible celestial phenomena. And it was predicted to happen at a certain time. And it did days after it was predicted. Like that happened. There's no question. And we still are like, don't know what it is. Maybe it was like rain, you know, sun dogs or, you know, because we're stuck. The problem is we're stuck in a worldview that says everything is just atoms and void and electricity. And there's really nothing more interesting than that. Some, you know, minds are kind of like just come along after the fact, once you get, you know, some atoms being complex enough, but they're just, you know, riding along for the fun of it. They don't really do anything. And if you're stuck in that worldview, you can't get out. You can't be shown anything that breaks you out of it, because you're just going to say, oh, minds are weird. We don't understand them yet. That's always going to be the wild card. I think the fundamental revolution is going to have to be people accepting that there's another possible picture of the world on which things are not just inert atoms bumping into each other and creating the illusion of like real mind and spirit and being and things like that. That's what I think needs to happen. But now I'm going on a tangent. I'll just
well, this that's stuff it. You can go down any of these rabbit holes. Yeah. You know, we can pick up any one of these and go just right off the edge on a rabbit hole of what could be.
That's why it makes it difficult to talk to new people about this. Like, you don't want to give them too much to scare them off. Like, holy crap. And then wait, the lizard people. And wait, like, you got to face
the reptilian. Oh, I didn't. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. And then Eisenhower did this, bastard guy.
And we try to do that at our, you know, on Thursday this year. The first day of the event, we're having these things where we're going to call them 101s, where like Steve Bassett's going to give an overview in a 101 class on government disclosure. And Matthew James Bailey is going to do a 101 class on artificial intelligence to get people kind of up to speed. Maybe you're new to this community. Maybe you're new to these ideas. This is a really a good place to start. This is where you'll get that information. You'll get an idea. We're doing 4 101s on Thursday. You get a sense of
what's happening. Are they all the same, like the same thing, or they're 101s of different subjects?
Different things. Steve's going to do government disclosure. Matthew James Bailey's going to do artificial intelligence. Anthony Peake's going to do 101 on physics. And then there's one more. Paul Hynek's going to do it on the history of UFOs. So if you're new to the community, you hear it right from J. Allen Hynek's son giving you an overview of the last 50 years of UFOs and UAPs and what's happened and where we are today. And then you're ready to go for the conference Friday morning.
I'm about to do this exact same thing at Yale. I'm giving a talk at the end of April that's like UAP for people who don't know anything about it and aren't sure there's anything.
With Sydney?
It's actually for Sci City. The Yale has this Center for Innovation that was started by this billionaire who created Alibaba in China. And he gave like $1 billion to Yale to create a city, or what he calls Sci City. It's got this bizarre big building in the middle of campus. It's like a center for innovative thinking and just interesting ideas that aren't getting funded. And they invited me up to talk about UAP and what it has to do with, you know, technology and history and all these other things. And then I'm giving a similar sort of talk at Vassar College, which is one of Yale's like sister schools, right after that, on which is kind of similar, on UAP and the concept of a cosmos, like a cosmos not just being the physical world, but like the world of stories and theories and, you know, human experience and art and all those things. That's all the cosmos and how UAP fits in and weaves through all these different dimensions of it. So I love this idea of like, hey, if you don't know anything about this and aren't sure there's anything to it, let me sit you down for an hour and just like blast you with a water hose of interesting shit. And you can walk away and like make your own decision. I think that's a respectful way of introducing people to it and letting them kind of make their own mind rather than being like, just look at this picture of Roswell. Like, you know, this guy's holding a piece of tinfoil. That's got to be from space. That doesn't seem to really
capture. People aren't, see what resonates with you and maybe, you know, so you don't feel like this is above me or whatever, because this, you can go way down rabbit holes, as we keep saying here. I mean, a lot of this stuff can get really into the weeds, but
really quick.
Quick. And you know, even like on Friday night, we're doing these bus tours where we go out in the, literally out into the desert with Mark D'Antonio, and he's gonna like, you know, bring a laser pointer and a screen, and he's gonna explain what's happening and firsthand with a real awesome astronomer. I mean, what an amazing thing. I mean, it's just all of these are like great little opportunities, you know, that you just normally don't get to do.
Yeah. Actually, guys, if you go on the website for Contact in the Desert, this shows you, I think all the itineraries are up there, but there's just a plethora of different things to do. One thing, Ron, is it family friendly? Like, is it a place where you could bring the kids, or is it more sort of adult orientated?
Well, you can bring your kids. You know, they have a beautiful pool there. They have a room. They have an escape room in the resort. There's a game room in the resort. So there is stuff like that. A lot of these lectures, though, obviously some of the stuff's kind of heady. I don't know how young kids would enjoy that too much, but certainly there's things for them to do there, the pool being the main one, and that's beautiful. If you look on the website, it's sick. And
yeah.
There's hot tubs and... It's just a gorgeous venue. It's a good place to do this. At night, we play movies on the they have a big lawn there, and we play movies outside. Like, we're playing E.T. this year, and what's her name is going to announce it. The mother in E.T., Dee Wallace, is going to be there, and she's going to introduce the film, and we're going to play that. So it's really cool. You can see, and you know, if you're from, I'm from Cleveland, you guys are from Canada. How cool is it to sit outside at night watching a movie, you know, because the temperature's 70 degrees and it's beautiful night sky.
Palm trees. Yeah, absolutely.
Such a cool environment. Absolutely.
Yeah. And guys, so there's three different passes. You could get a 5-day pass, a galactic pass, and an interstellar pass. Just so I understand, the interstellar, that's like the, is that VIP sort of?
Well, no, what it is the, we have 1 day and 5 days. So if you want to just come out 1 day and check it out, you can go for 1 day. You can buy the whole 5-day event pass. And then we have something called, a lot of these conferences do this. You have a galactic pass, which is, we had mentioned earlier that there's a couple things you can buy extra, which are, the workshops with the speakers or the intensives with the speakers. This includes all of those. So you don't have to worry about buying individual tickets. You can just go to anything you want. And then Interstellar is the exact same thing, but it comes with a meal package right at the hotel. So you can just go to the...
Built right into it.
Yeah,
built restaurant right into it. Or whatever, yeah, just scoop it up.
Yeah, and it's a buffet style, I think, for the 5 days. So all three meals would be buffet style. So if people are worried about, you know, what you're going to eat,
choose whatever covered. You want. Yep.
Exactly. Just pay for the meal and you're good to go from there. I am absolutely looking forward to heading out there, meeting you in person and meeting a whole bunch of people and just being able to socialize with the UFO community, which I've never been able to do outside the podcast. So it'd be nice to do that. Michael, do you have any final questions for Ron today?
Well, you sort of anticipated it in one thing you said, but my traditional last question is, what books would you recommend to our audience for people who want to like understand the phenomenon the way that you do? What are the things that have like blown your mind that you wish everybody would read?
Well, I mentioned it earlier. I feel that the books by Don Schmidt and Tom Carey on Roswell to me, that was something that I read that was compelling, that really pushed me over the top to go, you know, that there's a lot of stuff here that's adding up to me as a rational person to feel like something happened here. There's definitely more than what they're telling us. Of course, a lot of people in this community point to the two starter books that are must-haves, which is, you know, Chariots of the Gods, of course, by Van Daniken, and Whitley Strieber's Communion. These are must-reads. Abduction by John Mack, we mentioned. That's a phenomenal book that I found very compelling from a very compelling guy. So that's what I would recommend.
Absolutely. We'll have links to them in the description of the video. Ron, thank you so much for being here, man. I like you very much.
He's a good guy, isn't he?
Thanks, brother. I had a lot of fun, man. It's good. It's fun to talk about this stuff. And it's really fun to talk about it with 1,000 other people that have the same ideas and the same thing, or thousands, I should say. So you guys, it's going to be a ball, man. Jason, you're going to love it.
Love it. All right. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. And I think we have a little bit of a break there, Michael, at least for a week or so. And then we'll come back. I got a few other interviews lined up as well. And guys, don't forget to check us out on Patreon. YouTube is looking pretty good. We had to redo our YouTube channel, unfortunately, but we are booming on YouTube right now. So that's good. And I thank you all for listening. Ron, as always, my man, it's been a pleasure.